Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf, blind, pink puppy and his family, by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin the day's readings with Piglet by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian. In the last chapter, we learned that Melissa lives with her family of 6 dogs, 5 birds, 3 children, and a husband, and her work as a traveling veterinarian is very important to her. She had to make sure that all of these members of her family were taken care of before she set off to Petco in the neighboring village. Lethal White Chai, Each Mix, was the somewhat confusing subject line of the email that came in on Tuesday, February 28th, from Dr. Gloria Andrews. She's my friend and colleague who was founding the director of Colbert Veterinary Rescue Services in the tiny town of Colbert, Georgia, which is not far from Athens. 6 years earlier, I met Gloria when we adopted our beautiful white Aussie border collie, Gina, from her rescue organization. Warm and kind-hearted, Gloria Andrews proved to be a kindred spirit, a vet with her own hospital and one who rescued animals from sometimes horrific situations. She was relentless in finding them loving homes, and in many states across the country, including Connecticut. Normally, I would have opened the email instantly, but the phone was ringing and the dogs needed attention. Because we had just gotten back from the cross-country ski trip, the last vacation unbeknownst to us that we'd enjoy for some time, there were other more urgent emails to respond to. When I finally returned to Gloria's email, I stared at the subject line again before opening. Then it hit me. This was probably an autocorrect typo, and she had meant to say, Chai Docs Mix, a Chai Docs Mix, a Doxy, a lethal white Chihuahua dachshund. Now I was intrigued. Still, I had to laugh at the subject line and what it meant as a warning and tempt me at the same time. With that, I thought, oh, I'm not so worried about extra dog temptation right now, and I opened the fateful email. Good morning, Melissa. We have this precious little fellow who came with his litter from a hoarding situation. He has microphthalmia and is not visual. The dachshund mixes that came to us from the same place are dappled, and mom is dappled as well, so this is likely how he came about. He is 1 pound now and at 6 weeks, and he will be a special placement. Know anyone who may be a good fit for him? First, I looked at the photo of the 1 pound adorable puppy cradled in her hands and thought, oh my God, he's tiny. He's precious, and he's pink. Then I read Gloria's email again, which said he was blind and had a condition affecting the size of his eyes, most likely caused by birth defects and generally the result of double dapple genetics, suggesting that he was probably deaf too. As Gloria was aware, I had a particular desire to care for and help place animals with special needs. In hindsight, I think it's hilarious that Gloria asked, "Know anyone who may be a good fit?" Even more hilarious is that my immediate response was to write back and say, no. For about 2 minutes, I felt strong and decisive. My no was grown up and responsible. The thought of spreading myself too thin with a full house and busy vet practice was enough to make me feel good about my boundaries. But then I looked back at the picture. This could be a problem for me. True, this was not my style of dog, particularly hairless, and my dogs are all fluffy. But he was pink and deaf and blind. I was concerned about the references to the hoarding situation. The accounts are upsetting to hear, overcrowding and animals confined in numbers to cages, many kept outside in the elements or hidden under piles of various hoarded belongings in barns, old cars, or in horribly unsanitary conditions in people's homes. Studies have documented how the accumulation of urine and feces could cause fumes strong enough to kill young dogs, cats, and other animals, or severely damage their development. Starvation is a common effect of hoarding when so many animals have to compete for the scarcity of food and only the stronger survive. Whenever police are called to investigate hoarding situations, they commonly find dead animals strewn throughout the collection of suffering. After about 3 minutes, I wavered and then launched completely into, "I have to help." All I could think about was what it was like when we got Gina, who had come from Colbert Veterinary Rescue Services, through similar circumstances, except she had been at the rescue for 2 months before Gloria got her up to Connecticut for an adoption event. Gina's level of anxiety was off the charts. As an Aussie border collie, Gina's disabilities were in keeping with a genetic condition that afflicts Australian shepherds and other herd breeding called double merle, resulting in a mostly white coat, deafness in one or both ears, and potentially serious structural eye defects that can cause vision deficit and blindness. Disabled puppies like Gina and the pink puppy in the email needed an extensive amount of care and supervision that's hard to offer in most rescue situations. Of course I had to help. How? Well, the most obvious answer came to me. We could foster. We would only need to help for a few days, 2 days, 2 weeks, max. In a nanosecond, I shifted right into high gear with the expectation of how much fun it would be to take care of and work with a deaf, blind puppy. My long-term plans, further down the road, when we weren't so full up at the inn, had been to adopt a dog with those disabilities. Specifically, the plan was to adopt a deaf, blind herding dog later on, not a tiny Chai Doxy mix. But I got excited, contemplating how much I could learn from such a profoundly disabled dog by taking him in for a little while. He was so cute, Gloria and her people would have no trouble finding him a permanent placement. In addition to many years of observing the fostering process with my clients, as a family we had experience with fostering a number of dogs and birds in the past. We approached the undertaking with the recognition that they came to us so that we could care for them, help them settle down, take care of their medical issues, and then send them on their way to a wonderful life with a loving family. Each came with a different backstory, but all needed some time to decompress, heal, and feel love. Foster parents to dogs, cats, birds, and others have very mixed emotions that vary with each experience. Some fall so madly in love with their foster pets that they end up adopting them. Some are resolute that they are there to foster, not adopt, and help one animal after another. We all know that for each pet we foster, we save that individual, but also open a space up in a shelter for another homeless pet to enter. So we actually save two for every one we agree to foster. Back in the summer of 2013, we had fostered 3 dogs in succession, Axel, Tommy, and Olivia. Each one presented different fostering challenges. Axel was a young adult, as cute could be, a black Chihuahua Yorkie mix who had a severe blood disorder and who I was able to stabilize. During the time he lived in our house, I fell madly in love with sweet little Axie and couldn't believe I managed to give her away when the time came to deliver him to his forever home. Axel was followed by the very anxious Tommy Touchdown, a Maltese poodle who had been abused before being rescued. He wanted to pee all over our house, something that was not easy to address after his earlier trauma. Right away, I put a belly band on him to solve that problem, even though I knew that he would require a tremendous amount of work from whatever family was found for him. Actually, his next home was another foster placement, and when I went to drop him off 2 hours away, I again warned Tommy's new foster mom about the peeing, asking her, "Are you sure?" She was sure, letting me know that she had 4 delightful daughters, whom I met, who would give Tommy lots of love and attention, and they were all committed to fostering him until the right forever home was found. Sure enough, 4 months later, Tommy's long-awaited placement turned out to be his very own happily ever after. Our 3rd dog that summer was Olivia, a 6-week-old golden doodle, mid-sized dog who needed urinary tract surgery from problems that caused her to continuously leak urine. She was none too pleased with the diaper I had put on her and frequently ended up running around with it in her mouth, just like a toy. One of my clients generously donated the $12,000 for the surgery, and Olivia recovered beautifully, new, and improved. She ended up finding a wonderful family who was ecstatic to bring her into their home. Those three experiences, in addition to the others, gave me every reason to think I could help out with Gloria's tiny rescue puppy without being tempted to keep him. Before I signed up for him, I forwarded the mail to Warren, which a quick question. Foster project? Maybe it was more like giving him notice. Fortunately, he came back with an affirming fine. We talked later that night when he came home from work, though not at length. We were both completely set on not adopting any more dogs, so there was nothing to worry about. Besides, we assured each other, how much trouble can 1 pound of puppy be? Gloria and her team were planning to transport dogs from Georgia up to Connecticut for an adoption event a few days later. Go ahead and bring the baby up for us to foster, I told her, and agreed to pick him up on Saturday at the Petco around 10:30. It was then that she told me the dog's name, Bart. Gloria filled me in on his story. There had been 3 people with 3 dogs who were not spayed and neutered, all living in the same apartment. The dogs bred uncontrollably over a period of time until there were about 30 dogs. When they were evicted, the humans listed the dogs on the Craigslist. But the time the rescue group found out about them, they had already given away many of the dogs. This is an upsetting scenario to anyone who's familiar with the fact that many animals are given away for free through Craigslist ads. It's always advisable to go through rescue organizations before bringing a pet home or for giving one away. Without thorough, skilled screening, it is very difficult for an average trusting citizen who's desperate to get rid of or sincerely place an animal to differentiate between good and bad people coming to take the pets. Some people are forced to rehome the pets due to circumstances out of their control. They look for loving homes for their beloved pet. Potential adopters can dress themselves up to be whatever they want, to come off as kind, caring, but some are cruel animal abusers who pose as interested new pet parents. For these reasons, I leave placing my foster dogs to the experts associated with reliable, reputable rescue organizations. Now and then I hear complaints from potential adopters who claim to have been scrutinized more carefully than if they were adopting a child. This is all out of love for the animal into whom rescue groups invest a great deal of time, money, and emotion. The bottom line is, don't give dogs away for free. Don't get them for free from ads. Go to the rescue groups. Call local veterinary hospitals or visit reputable online listings like Pet Finder and Adopt a Pet that will lead you to reliable rescue groups in your area who have pets in need of homes. Or attend in-person adoption events. The donations you make to rescue groups help them to continue life-saving work. Gloria described aspects of this particular rescue process that sounded unfortunately familiar, how they met in a gas station parking lot, about 9 dogs were handed over, including Bart's mother, Abigail, 2-week-old Bart, and his 3 littermates. Although they didn't know which dog was the dad, Gloria assumed that both of Bart's parents were Dapple. The marbled color pattern seen in the dachshunds, in herding animals, and especially the breeds, and bulldogs, this marbled colored pattern is called merle, and in the Great Dane it's called harlequin. Gloria felt that the breeding that led to this double dapple complication had not been intentional. Some breeders intentionally breed 2 dapples together, hoping to get a very splashy colored puppy, but this results in a 25% chance that each puppy will give 2 of the dominant dapple genes, which is linked to a predominantly white coat and congenital eye and ear defect. In Bart's case, the original 3 parent dogs weren't bred intentionally for color. They were negligently not spayed or neutered. Some of their offspring carried the dapple coloring gene, so when they bred, the dapple gene was again passed on, or until eventually 2 dappled colored dogs bred, producing a litter that included 3 out of 4 dapple puppies. But as Bart was the tiniest and the only one who was pink, it was a miracle that he survived these precarious first 2 weeks of life, but what came next was just as traumatic. His canine mom, Abigail, rejected Bart when they arrived at the rescue. Gloria hadn't fed him until a few weeks passed and he gained enough strength to push his way back to Abigail. The other puppies, Gloria said, were twice his size and better adjusted. 2, a male named Barrett and a female named Belinda, were also white-coated, deaf, and had vision deficits. A 4th puppy, Blaze, was brown and white and was not disabled. At the parking lot of Milford Petco, I pulled into a spot and made sure everyone in the car was warm and snug before I hopped out of the car and hurried inside, excited to meet the adorable baby boy dog. For just a beat, I wondered if I downplayed the challenges of caring for Bart. But my own refrain interrupted me. How much trouble can a 1-pound puppy be? I was about to find out. As I approached the check-in desk at the adoption event, before I could say anything, one of the two volunteers who recognized me said with great enthusiasm, "Thank goodness you're here." I was about to ask where Bart was, but was interrupted by the most grating, ear-piercing, banshee-sounding scream. It went on and on. As I turned to my left, I saw a tiny pink dog sitting on a cushion in a small crate, all by himself, literally screaming at the top of his lungs. How he managed to get so much sound out, as minuscule as he was, I had no idea. His voice had a nasal rasp at times, like a goose, and at other times it rose up the scales as if he were being murdered. Bart was disrupting the adoption event and the whole store. I ran over to him and picked him up, expecting that he would stop, but no, he continued to wail. So I wrapped him in a blanket, grabbed his yellow records envelope, and ran out of the store. It only occurred to me when I got into the car that I hadn't even said hi to Gloria. It took a few minutes for him to calm down in the car as I petted and reassured him. He started to chew on some new puppy toys I had ready for him. After a few minutes taken to calm myself, I finally paused to get a good look at him. He was the size of a rat, even pinker than his pictures, and extremely adorable. He became quiet, I exhaled, and I gently put him in his car crate. As soon as I closed the crate door, Bart began to scream bloody murder again. Pretty soon, the other dogs in the car, usually so well-behaved, started letting out little confused barks of their own. Who is this guy? Dogs often become alarmed when they hear an animal in distress. Their responses are different, of course, based on their breed, type, temperament, experience, and the nature of the distress. My dogs were in the car with me. As horrible as the screaming was, because I was outwardly calm, the dogs could assume things were under control. As the screaming continued, Zoe was the first to become vocal, no doubt wondering what was going on with that little baby pup. Our dogs tend to egg one another on in situations like these. Zoe and Evie commonly get together, and so it wasn't long before Evie decided to join in on the barking, less out of concern and more because it was fun. Gina stayed relatively quiet, but I knew she didn't like dogs that barked. Gentle and sensitive, Gina understood that she was bigger than most of the dogs, except for Dean. But rather than go up in volume, she would react with a firm look and emphatic lunge toward the barker to express her displeasure. I knew the plaintive wailing of the puppy would upset Gina, a herding dog who prefers for everything to be orderly and organized. Before I could back out of my parking space, I realized he was screaming because he had to poop, which was what he was doing. Turning the car off, I leaned over to clean him and crate him. Got him back quietly and put him back in the crate. Then he pooped again as he screamed some more. Again I cleaned him and the crate and got him quiet. For a moment I sat there in the driver's seat, caught my breath, and finally pulled out of the parking lot, at which point he started to scream louder than before. The anxiety and fear he had to be feeling, unable to see, broke my heart. Maybe I hoped he'd tire himself out soon, but nope. The screaming continued the entire 30-minute drive to the concert hall in Norwalk. Once I parked, Bark's screams subsided, and to my surprise, he then fell asleep, apparently exhausted. Inside, I jogged into the auditorium, where the rehearsal was over. Daniel was waiting and happy for me to hear him play. For those 10 minutes, I was rejuvenated, revived. My ears needed a reprieve. I loved listening to Daniel play his horn in that hall. He has beautiful tone, and it was always recognizable and comforting. When he was finished, he walked back to the car with me to see the new foster puppy. As I opened the door carefully, expecting a blast of dog scream and bark, to my surprise, all the dogs were fast asleep. "Well," I whispered, not wanting to wake the baby and giving Daniel a quick hug goodbye, "you'll meet him next time." With that, I got into the driver's seat and hoped for the best. Maybe there was something about the motion of the car, the unnerved Bart, or maybe he had just tired himself out before and was now resting enough to scream some more later. He was a 7-week-old puppy, and after all, well, what could I expect? In silence, I willed everyone else to stay silent, too. I pulled out of the concert hall parking lot. Bart let out a guttural howl, rousing everyone else, and kept it up at top volume for the whole 10-minute trip to the vet hospital. This was not the way I had hoped to introduce our new foster dog to my veterinary friend. But by this point, upset and concerned as I was for him, I recognized that he was reacting to his fear and to the trauma of being cut off from the only familial bonds of his earlier life. My hope was that someone at the Norwalk Veterinary Hospital, a.k.a. NVH, could help me get him calmed down. Bart screamed all the way up the sidewalk and into the side entrance. He was still screaming as I carried him to the hospital treatment area, where everyone was surprised to see and hear my new baby foster dog. That was when we found Monica, a vet tech who came right over, took him from me, and began to sing to him and speak softly in Spanish, kiss him and pet him. Before he could make another peep, she stuffed him down her shirt. He was in heaven. Bart fell asleep immediately, and the bond he formed with her that day was instant and forever. We didn't know then, but we know now, that he was connecting with her through the smell of her breath. We would soon learn that this was how the tiny pink boy would identify and recognize people and other dogs. Monica had breathed him into being a contented, not so terrified 1-pound puppy. It was a huge relief to finally see him calm and content. I gathered up some puppy meds and other supplies that I needed, and then was ready to head back to the car. "Here you go," Monica sang and breathed to Bart, handing him back to me. Of course, being taken away from his new BFF and back into my arms, he started screaming at the top of his lungs all over again. That guttural screaming, both low and high-pitched, lasted the whole 20-minute ride home. As soon as we walked back into the house, the screaming suddenly stopped. Like a howling wind that had ceased to blow, I put him on the kitchen floor and let all the members of the six-pack come check him out. As they did, Bart was quiet and stood very still, and then his tail began to wag. Next week, we'll read Chapter 2, Born This Way, in the book Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf-blind pink puppy and his family, written by Melissa Shapiro, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. Our next reading comes from Guideway, Volume 79, Number 1, Spring 2025. This article is called Canine Enrichment, More Than Entertainment for Your Dog. When our dogs come in for their formal training as a guide or service dog, they live in the kennels in our training center. The kennel environment can be stressful for some, so if a dog is feeling bored or stressed, they can act out with inappropriate behavior. Under the supervision of Taylor Kelly, our canine care manager, we expanded our enrichment program about a year ago to include more activities to keep the dogs in the training center engaged and occupied when they're not out training. The goal of our enrichment program is to meet our dogs' needs so that they remain mentally, physically, and emotionally healthy. We do this by reducing their stress levels, providing entertainment, and curbing boredom. Kelly says licking is a natural behavior, but if you see a dog that's licking too much, whether it's licking itself or the owner or the floor, it's in a stress mode. A Kong or bone stuffed with soaked kibble lets the dogs interact with it through licking and sniffing and alleviates stress. Sometimes the canine care team will freeze giant ice cubes which provide different textures and temperament and temperature for the dogs. Going for walks or playing outside is another way to engage them. A unique type of activity involves animal-safe flavored bubbles that we generate using a handheld automatic bubble machine. The bubbles are both a visual enrichment, and if the dogs want to eat them, they can taste them as well. They come in a variety of flavors, such as bacon or peanut butter. Volunteers will walk down the kennel, blowing bubbles into the runs. Scent tubes are containers that can be filled with different fragrances, which dogs enjoy and which works on their mind. It's similar to the way humans do puzzles or crossword puzzles. We're still tired after that because we've worked our brains. Different scents can do that. Lavender, bergamot, and rosemary, which are three essential oils safe for dogs, are used in the training center. The canine care staff rotates each oil so fragrances don't clash with each other. While measuring success of the program can be challenging, dogs rotate in and out of the kennel constantly with staff and volunteers. Kelly pays attention to how the dogs react to the different activities. Is there a decrease in barking? Are they sniffing the tubes? Do they play with or run away from the bubbles? If I see a decrease in barking in those situations, then I know it's an engaging item and they like it. The canine care staff and the trainers have all given positive feedback, and the kennel volunteers like it because it provides them with more ways to engage with the dogs. With the success of the program in the training center, it has been introduced to the Puppy Transition Center. This article, Canine Enrichment, More Than Entertainment for Your Dog, comes from The Guideway, Volume 79, Number 1, Spring 2025, the newsletter of the Guide Dog Foundation, whose slogan is Live Without Boundaries. Well, that brings us to our conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I hope you enjoyed the articles, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce for Sun Sounds of Arizona and for Animal Companions. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.